Hi everyone, welcome back to Project Unlaced. I'm very excited for you to meet our guest today. She has a book that just got released today on the day that we are recording. So I have Stevie Smith. She is a sports dietitian. So how are you doing today?
Oh, I'm good. It's like it's as my publisher said, happy birthday to my book, you know?
Yes, I actually had Molly on like a couple weeks ago. So I'd love maybe to start with that of like, how did you get interested in like writing a book? And also, how did you get connected to Strong Girl Publishing?
Yeah, so I never had writing a book kind of on my list of like, oh, let's do that. Writing is actually something, a craft that I have developed over the last like maybe 5 to 6 years. I will say it's definitely, it was something for sure at the beginning was very much out of my comfort zone. But thankfully, I've had some good editors that I've worked with over that time span. And my book, Molly Herford from Strong Girl Publishing, is actually my co-author, which made it a little less scary for me to write a book. Because I knew she was going to be there helping me out on the technical side of things. So I met Molly just through our mutual network. And she had been kind of like asking me for quotes for articles that she was writing for different publications. And we met actually around this time last year. And she's like, well, if you want to write a book, like, let me know. And I was like, let's do it. And here we are.
Amazing. So I just want to say, like, I'm so inspired by your work. I've been an athlete for like as long as I can remember, and I struggled through an eating disorder and relative energy deficiency in sports. So being able to talk to professionals like you and see all the amazing awareness work that you're doing, I find it so inspiring and so important.
Appreciate that. Yeah, it's just like anything. You know, the more we can talk about it and get the information out there, you know, hopefully down the line, it's more people that we can just help through education and awareness, which is, you know, what you're doing, which is awesome. You know,
yeah,
great to see
Amazing.
So many people talking about it. Yeah, mm-hmm. For sure.
Definitely. So I think we'll take a couple steps back and maybe just talk about your early years in sport. Like, were you active growing up or did your love for athletics come a little bit later?
Yeah, so I played sports all throughout my childhood. I was very much a team sport athlete until almost just like my early 20s. I hated running growing up. I was a lacrosse goalie was really where I ended up focusing. I played soccer, basketball, lacrosse, but I played briefly in college, and I would complain about running a lap around the field all the time. And then I stopped playing college lacrosse because it was too much for me with schoolwork. I was struggling. It was Division III, you know, there was like no scholarship money. There's, you know, I was like, this is a little too much pressure for me to try and do well in school and do this sport. And that is when I found running because I just kind of I wasn't active for like a whole semester. And I was like, wait a minute, I've always been active. So I found running and ran my first marathon when I was 19. So,
oh my gosh. Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah. So from there I was like, oh, I think I really like this, like running, you know, endurance sports kind of world. It was a nice way to stay active and like find different communities no matter where I was living and set different goals. So yeah, so I've always been in it. Love sports. Mm-hmm. I love watching sports too. I just think it's amazing just like watching all the athletes and in all of their respective sports. It's really incredible.
Mm-hmm. And I saw that you've completed 10 full Ironmans, which is amazing. My dad's really into like Ironmans, and I've done like a sprint triathlon a couple times, but 10 full Ironmans is incredible. So how did you first get into triathlon? I know you mentioned the marathon. So how did that transition into adding biking and swimming into that?
Yeah, so I got into running, got hurt, and I was like, maybe just trying to run a lot of miles and run marathons is not it for me. And at the time, the people that I was running with, they were a little bit older. Like I was 20 and they were, closer to their 40s, right? And many of them did triathlon. So I was like, oh, that looks fun. So I was like, I can figure out how to swim. And in my early 20s, I saved all my money to get a bike. And I ended up training. 70.3 was the first triathlon I signed up for. And kind of on that journey that year in 2011, I got a stress fracture, a femoral neck stress fracture. And that was a really big wake-up call for me, both like nutrition-wise, training-wise, that I have to figure this out. And I've spoken about this before, and it's kind of one of the things I see in practice a lot is a lot of athletes really miss that when there's a jump in training, nutrition also needs to jump. And even if it's like just a little jump, but then you're stacking week after week after week, and nutrition isn't following, right? It eventually catches up. And that is kind of the situation I found myself in when I had my stress fracture. Thankfully, that was like basically my only injury, and I haven't been injured since. But over the years, I definitely learned that with biking and swimming and less running, my body is just happier and it just works really well for me. And after I did the 70.3, I was like, I think I want to try the full Ironman. And then I was hooked.
And has there been like a particular race that stands out to you, maybe because of its difficulty or like the success that you found in that race?
Yeah, this one always is at top of mind. Well, two of them, but Ironman Louisville in 2017. It's my PR Ironman. I PR'd every single leg across the board, about a 35-minute PR. And when it's a race that long, there's always so many variables. And earlier that year, I actually had done Ironman Lake Placid in July, but earlier that winter, I had a car versus pedestrian mishap when I was living in DC. And so this was my non-sports induced related injury where I basically tore my ankle ligament and had an avulsion fracture, avoiding getting hit by a car. So I was not hit by said car, which is great. So the long and short of it is that, of course, my training block for Ironman Lake Placid was condensed. So I decided to do Ironman Louisville. And it's just one that was just, it was gritty, and I did it for myself. I drove myself down to Louisville all by myself, did the race by myself. And like, I was just very proud of the effort that I put in that training block and just sticking to my training plan and like trusting my fueling and trusting all of that to just kind of put together what was a big day for me, which is, again, really hard in a race that there's so many variables in that and that long. So that was something like I still look back and I was like, I'm really proud of like how I showed up for myself and, reached one of my goals that I had set for over many years and, didn't do anything harmful or crazy, just kind of was very consistent and, strong fueling, strong nutrition all across the board. So I was happy with that one for sure.
Definitely. And before we get into like your journey as a dietitian, I'd love to know a little bit more about your fueling during an Ironman race, especially since it is so long and you do have to be really careful about like what you are eating, that you're not upsetting your stomach. So what does like your fueling look like on race day?
Yeah, so full disclosure, I have not done a full Ironman since 2019. So I did the 10 in 7 years. So I definitely worked myself into burnout and needed to take a big step back from endurance stuff for a few years. So though I don't think my training plan would look, or my fueling plan, excuse me, for an Ironman would look much different. About that time, I was getting like 76 grams of carb per hour. I would probably push it a little bit higher. I did make my return to the marathon after almost a decade off of open marathon running this May, and I was like right around 84 grams of carb per hour there. And like that was like a perfect, the most perfect day. But for an Ironman, lots of sports drink, lots of gels, some chews. I like work a little bit of solid in on the bike, But otherwise, with the intensity, it's the thing a lot of my clients complain about. That's a lot of gels. And I was like, but we're doing a very long effort at an intensity that we want to make sure we're tolerating it. So my gel choices kind of have changed over the year, just kind of like based on like texture and taste. But I always try to like do a mix of textures and flavors so I have some flexibility. I try to use what's on race courses. Now on the Ironman courses, they unfortunately don't have a sports drink that has carbohydrate in it. So, but back in the day when I did it, they did. So, kind of just like training and approaching a fueling plan in a way that I feel like it's attainable. I can execute it on race day. It's not over the top, and I'm setting myself up to succeed to kind of hit my fluid, carb, and sodium goals.
And then speaking of your journey of becoming a dietitian, what led you to study dietetics and become a registered dietitian? Was there a certain moment that made you realize how important nutrition is in performance and just overall health?
Yeah, so nutrition came really before the performance side of things for me. I went to SUNY Brockport. That's where I played lacrosse. That's a state school in Western New York. And I was a phys ed major with a public health minor. And that was about, the early 2000s when like everybody wanted to be a phys ed teacher. So I was like, this is probably not the best idea. But as part of my public health minor, there was like a nutrition 101 course. And it was kind of the first time where I was like, oh, like I'm very intrigued with this. Like, this is very interesting to me. Just kind of like how our body utilizes, right? The nutrients that we take in and, obviously all of the different metabolic processes. It was a very high level or like very just like intro course. But I was like, I think I want this to be my major. So that was my sophomore year. So I transferred my sophomore year to Buffalo State University to do my Bachelor's of Science in Dietetics and Nutrition. And that's when I got a little bit more into endurance sport. And just kind of through the years, they merged. Like, I never planned to be in sports nutrition. I worked in clinical dietetics for 6 years in Washington, D.C., while doing some sports nutrition stuff on the side. I just kind of always knew I wanted to help people somehow. And, as I've grown, like as a dietitian and provider, it's definitely been a good journey in like learning how to help people just kind of live a fuller life.
Yeah, and I love that you said that nutrition should be like flexible and personal and realistic. Like, I would love to know more of your like philosophy when it comes to helping people as your role as a dietitian.
Yeah, and this is definitely something I've grown into as I've been in practice. So by the time I finished my undergrad degree, transferring made it a little bit delayed. My view and how I approached nutrition back then is very different to now. And some of that has just been learning and like seeing how other practitioners have done it. Taking the time to dive deeper into like more about behavior change. And for me, through the years and just working with a lot of different people. So when I was in Washington, I worked with a very, very unique patient population that I had not seen, very low income, not a lot of resources, very sick, a lot of different comorbidities. And, just from very different walks of life, being in such a major city, that I am so grateful that it helps me really develop people skills and really figure out like how to relay information in a way that is going to land with the individual. And like, I'm not saying I get it right every time or I get it right on the first try every time, but to me, I can say whatever and tell people to do things, but it doesn't matter if they don't understand or I'm not saying it in a way that makes sense to them or fits into their lives. And, nutrition is so important for so many different things, for social connection, family, connection to your culture, your ethnicity. So that's like, to me, it's, people are often trying to like fit a round ball into a square hole, and it's like, okay, let's see how we can make this work for you based on what you have access to, what resources you have, what are your preferences, what is your schedule? I always tell people, I never want you to show up to your kid's birthday party and be like, I don't know how to eat. I can't have a piece of cake, right? Like learning how to make those adjustments and get the tools to show up to social functions and know like, okay, my needs are different as an athlete, but like this is how I can make what I have available work for me and what my goals are right now. So
I love that you talk about that food as more than just like something that you eat for like health, because I think so much of diet culture is like almost like objectifying food into a number. And I think that's one of the things that I've really realized in recovery is that food is so much more. It's a way that like I can bond with my family, and it's a way that we can like celebrate things when we go out to like ice cream or go out to dinner, and it's a way for, me to have fun with my friends. So I think like I love that you bring that up, because I think so much right now is like objectifying food. It's either good or it's bad, and food has this many calories and this many fats. So I love that you recognize that and you preach that to your clients.
Yeah, I try. Sometimes I feel like I'm yelling into the void where I'm like, food does not hold a moral value. Like, this is not good or bad.
Definitely. So now I'd love to get into like a big event for you today as of recording, November 11th, is that your book, Power Up, is released today. So I'd love to know like what inspired you to create this resource, especially for young women in sports.
Yeah, so Molly and I like had the idea together, and Molly is like, there's really nothing out there that is kind of made for that audience, for that population. And while there are plenty of really great nutrition books out there on the market that give sound information, we really wanted to do something that a young woman who's in high school or college could pick up and actually understand and apply. Again, kind of going back to my philosophy, like, yes, the science is important. We have science in there. We have all of our reference. It's evidence-based, but like, it doesn't matter that I say, okay, well, you need carbohydrates because it's the most important fuel source for your body. If they're like, okay, well, I don't know what that means for me. Like, what does that look like? How do I do this? What should my days look like? What should, a plate look like at the dining hall? What are my options here? Like, okay, you said have carbs before my workout, but I'm afraid to have carbs before my workout so I don't have like a stomach ache. So it is very much digestible for that person, for parents, for coaches. And we have the science threaded through there, but also a lot of real life application, and like specific things that are very unique to that population. Like your first time living in an apartment, like what do you need for basics for your kitchen? Or what are some really quick recipes? Or what are some dorm room staples that you can have on hand? Those types of things as well.
Yeah, I love the idea of like making these things accessible, because I especially think with the rise of like social media, there's so many voices telling us like we have to eat this and avoid this, and it like can get so hard to understand like what is real and what is what we should actually do. And then there's also like like science coming at us, and that can feel also like really overwhelming. And I love being able to break that down into like this is a lot simpler than like it people make it out to be. So I love the idea of just like making a book that is for this population that I think, struggles like with food, especially with diet culture right now.
Yeah, we have a lot of debunking, and it's one of those skills that I'm very grateful to have. And I did a guest lecture yesterday talking to some first year graduate students in a doctor of physical therapy program, and one of them was, "Oh, I saw this on TikTok. What do you think about X?" And it's kind of like that skill of like, okay, let's zoom out and look and see, okay, who's saying this? How are they saying this? What are they basing this on? Like, is it a scientific study that's done in rats? And like, not something that we can really apply to you as a human being. So like my hope is too, is that like we'll help start to like, if somebody's not there, start to kind of develop that ability to just like take a step back when you're consuming information and being like, let me think about this for a second and see how much like weight I should put into this claim like that this person is making. And, you know, also to me, it's very important that I wasn't just throwing another clinical boring textbook at people.
Definitely. I'm sure the readers will appreciate that.
Yeah, for sure.
So I'd love to know, like, what do you hope that readers will take away after reading this book?
Oh, wow. So many things. Honestly, I just hope that at least for some people, even if they have to read it a couple times or skim it, that they can start to make some meaningful changes in a way that is just going to help them better support their bodies for sport, health, just really improving, you know, using nutrition as a tool to improve their life, like quality of life, but also like health and performance can exist together. You know, using nutrition as a tool to help us reach those goals, whatever they are, whether it's performance goals or, you know, maybe we're like really working towards to getting into a certain college, right? Like our academics, whatever the goals are, is knowing that like when we are fed or like optimally, you know, hitting our, you know, nutrition goals, whatever they might be, that we can show up in life better in our relationship. Like you said, with your friendships, right? I think about like going out for ice cream and like being able to go out for ice cream with your girlfriends and not feel anxious and like panic about it all day, which like no shame if that is how you feel. That is so common. But if we can start to have that, those conversations and kind of just put it out there that it doesn't have to be like this, then you can just get so much more out of, you know, what we have in life.
Yeah, no, I totally resonate with that. And I mean, I just had this like a couple of days ago where like me and my family and some of our family friends went out to eat. And I know that just a couple of years ago, that would have been such a stressful experience for me that I wouldn't have been able to even like live in the moment and be able to like make an enjoyable experience. But now being in a much more recovered place, I think I was actually able to appreciate it. And while there still was anxiety around food, I think it was so much easier to like rationalize those thoughts and realize that like food can be more than just something that I eat for health. And even if it is, you know, quote unquote unhealthy, like that doesn't make it bad because food doesn't, you know, isn't good or bad.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's awesome. I know. And like, you know, one of the things, especially if there's a history of eating disorder, if you're struggling with disordered eating, like, you know, those thoughts won't ever usually completely disappear. It's just, how do we move through them? Like, are we able to like recognize it, hold space for that, but then, you know, not act on it in a way that is unsupportive to what your health and like performance and life goals are? So I think that's really great. It's probably such a good feeling for you too.
Definitely. It's definitely like recovery has been so hard and so many ups and downs and it's been so frustrating. But then being able to have those little moments of saying like, I wouldn't have been able to do this like a couple years ago or even a couple months ago, I think is really powerful.
Yeah, that's awesome. Congrats.
Thank you. And then going back to your role as a dietitian, I'd love to know, like, what are some of the most common mistakes you see athletes making when it comes to nutrition and recovery?
Yeah, so there's so many things. I would say, like, and I feel like every sports dietitian says this, but like under eating carbohydrates is usually pretty common. And really to no fault of the athlete, usually it's just the general messaging around carbohydrates in the general population. And then there's that gap between athletes and active people really need so much more than the general population. And then when they're being shamed in the general population, like there just creates a bigger gap where people are falling short. Right now, big things that I see too are kind of like the healthified food trends out there, like the proteinified foods. And everybody's like,
I feel like
yeah,
I've
like,
seen that so much now that like everyone, like, also like is justifying like eating certain things because it has more protein in it. And it's like, well, like you don't like need like protein is great, but also like you don't need that much. Like if you're satisfying like those requirements.
Yeah, and it's like, is it really health promoting to get like 50% of your protein intake per day from protein chips, protein bar, protein cookie, protein water, right? Like, like to me, that's like, everybody's very concerned and demonizing ingredients. I'm like, okay, but like, you're now healthifying and glorifying these ultra processed proteinified foods just because it has more protein and they're marketing it to you as air quotes healthy. And like, yes, those can be tools in our toolbox where like, maybe we're gonna have a protein bar because we're in classes all day and like that's literally all you can eat in between a class and that's that. But it's like when it that's the majority of your protein intake or we're relying too heavily on these things, there is of course the benefits, the synergistic effect of food where, people are like, oh, but like it, X, Y, or Z. I was like, yeah, but like when you eat like eggs, right, you're also going to get all of those other micronutrients in the egg yolk in addition to it, right? So just that's definitely a really, really big thing right now. And I'm like, also, I feel like that would just like hurt my stomach. I don't know. Too much like protein powder and added protein. I was like, that doesn't feel good for my stomach.
Definitely. And then we've kind of touched on it before, but like there's so much diet culture and with social media and body image pressures. How do you make sure that like young women are using nutrition and sports nutrition as a way to empower themselves rather than a way to like restrict and assert control over their food and their body?
Yeah, this one is super challenging. 'Cause like I was once a young girl. I had a pretty good, thankfully, a pretty good relationship with my body, but there were definitely times where I was like, oh, well, maybe if I looked a little different or what, X, Y, or Z. With my athletes, for many of them, when we talk about it from a performance forward perspective, it tends to land a little bit better because they are so driven to be performing better at their sport or showing up performing how they want to in their sport. So kind of leaning into some of that feedback from our bodies that we're not usually taught to pay attention to, like, okay, well, how do I feel during practice? Like, how's my, like, I'm thinking about basketball. Like, how's your coordination? Are you able to like hit the drills, hit your shots? Like, if we start to see that coordination start to go and we're feeling slow, we can't sprint, right? Like, that can very much be nutrition related. So being like, hey, let's try and have a snack before practice. I know it can feel scary, but you're not eating all afternoon. Let's see how you do in practice. Like, notice how you feel, in sport. They always usually feel better when they have that energy on board. So a lot of that is helping them kind of see like, okay, these are kind of some signs that we're probably missing the mark and you love your sport and you want to do it. So these are the things that we can start to do to help you feel better and get stronger at your sport. And that can tend to be a pretty good driver there.
Yeah, I definitely relate with what you're saying. I know that sports was such a big part of like my drive for recovery and why like I really focused on like recovering my weight back and getting a healthier relationship with food because I wanted to be able to go back to exercise and have a healthier relationship with both food, my body, and exercise. So I think that's such a powerful message. And then shifting away from like the actual athlete themselves, but how can parents and coaches better support young female athletes in fueling and building a healthy relationship with food?
Yeah, for sure. So body image talk, making comments about, well, first of all, no one should make a comment about anybody's body, like no matter our ages or our genders, right? Like this is not it's a very deep-seated thing in a lot of people, but like keeping body image talk out of it, not rewarding your athletes for losing weight and being like, "Oh, like you're looking fit. Oh, and you ran your best time. Great job," right? So when we congratulate people for that, it's like saying, for often for many people, it's like, oh, okay, like I'm getting this praise for losing weight because I performed well. So I'm going to keep losing weight or doing X, Y, or Z to continue to get this positive reinforcement. Having a very neutral approach and talk about food as well. And, you know, not using food as a reward. And, you know, of course, kind of like the all foods fit approach, like, yes, you know, as a parent, we're going to encourage them to get, you know, color fruits and vegetables in and whole grains, but also know that, like, as an athlete, especially a younger athlete, like added sugar isn't bad. Like added sugar, those easy to digest carbohydrates are going to be a really great and easy way for your young athlete to get the energy and the nutrients they need to perform better in their sport. And that's where, like, with the adults too, it's, you know, knowing that, okay, maybe what you're doing as an adult might work. I'm going to say air quotes work for you, because I'm always a little skeptical. Is it actually working? But that definitely, it does not apply to your children, right? And, you know, the needs are so different and unique of a 40 something year old sedentary person. Like maybe they exercise 5 days a week, but they're at a desk all day, versus a growing 16 year old athlete who has, you know, maybe double practices someday and is like in a very demanding school schedule. It's just very different and not something that can be applied across the board. So those are, I mean, I could go on, but those are some high level things.
Definitely. So as we close out this conversation, I'd love to know, like, what's next for you? Do you have more races coming up, more writings, or any new projects in the works?
Oh man, my mind is always spinning. I have a little bit of a dream project. It is not in the works quite yet. I'm like, I gotta get through this book launch before I start thinking about the next thing. I'm like kind of like always trying to be like 100 steps ahead. Have some exciting race goals. I think I might be dipping my toes back into the half Ironman distance next year. It has also been since like 2019, 2018 since I've done a half Ironman. So working towards trying that. And, you know, I've, you know, mentioned taking a big step back from training and racing for a few years, and I'm feeling in a better mental headspace and love the community I have around. And, you know, I just share this for people to know, like, it's okay to take a step back from having races on your calendar and like doing, you know, really structured training. Like you can still move, you can still participate. And it is important to give yourself like that mental rest if you are feeling unmotivated and burnout. So so I'm excited about that. But yeah, hopefully I can make that big project happen. It may or may not involve food. So
amazing.
I'll leave it there.
I love that last message of like exercise doesn't have to be so rigid, because I think people can also develop, just like they can develop an unhealthy relationship with food, I think there can also be an unhealthy relationship with exercise. And I know I felt this where I've had to take periods where, you know, I don't have my watch, so I can't like track all my steps and my calories burned. And sometimes like I step away from running and I just do strength training. And I think it's just important to like always tap into your motivations of like, why are you doing exercise? Like, is it a compulsion? Is it a way to control things? Or is it something that makes you happy, that makes you healthy? So I love that message. And I think that's a beautiful closing message.
Yeah. The why is so important. Same with food choices. And, you know, I've been there, and sometimes, you know, we learn these things the hard way, but yeah, it is, I understand. It's definitely scary to take a step back. But most of the time it's just going to leave you in a better spot.
Amazing.